good day all round. Oh, well, you've all seen a dragon before, have you? Geralt, will you please tell them?
Their numbers are dwindling. Treasure seekers sort of that. But they do exist. What people call green dragons, like the one we have here, they're the most common. Red dragons, less so. Black dragons are the rarest.
Gold dragons are rarest.
Gold dragons are a myth.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building and sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our second season, we are discussing The Witcher, the fantasy show by Netflix. Today, we are going to talk about the major plot points in episode 6, titled Rare Species, and give our reflections on the show and some takeaways that will help you navigate this world.
Hey guys, Kinfolk Lore contains adult content, much like the show The Witcher contains adult content. So if you don't enjoy commentary about a sensual use of flora and yikes, fauna, this may not be the show for you. But if, you know, uses of the plant kingdom and flirting and sexual innuendo is your jam, just control your chaos and tip your bard. This is episode 6. I'm weak, my love. And I am wanting. If this is my path I must forge, I'll welcome my sentence, give you my penance. Gorgeous Garata, jury and judge. Lovely Garata. Andrew, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer lovely or gorgeous? Is the metaphor landing or is it a bit too cerebral? What do you think?
I have a feeling that he needs a new tune. Like, isn't this the same tune he's always using? This sounds like, I don't want to bring up a sore topic, but it sounds like some of NSYNC's music back in the day.
Where really?
I couldn't always tell the songs apart. I'm just saying, I don't know.
We will not divulge into this boy band fiasco of Backstreet versus NSYNC, but I'm gonna say, okay, you got one. That's going
for the
Backstreet.
There's no reason to get into the argument because Backstreet Boys is better. Anyway, go on. Carry on with the summary.
All right. So Yaskier is out here. You know, he's testing some new lyrics. He's trying to figure out whether this is gonna be his follow-up smash to Toss a Coin to Your Witcher. And
how long has he been working on trying to get a second number one hit?
Well, let's just say he got shut down by Queen Calanthe. The other one was a little bit of a crowd pleaser, but not quite reached the levels of the other one. It's been a while. It's been quite
it's been
a while.
Maybe this be his comeback song.
This is going to be definitely, hopefully, a comeback. And as he's singing, he's asking these two men who have sent Geralt into a cave to fight and kill a monster what they think of his lyrics, just like we did a little while ago. And, you know, these guys are like, he's probably dead. All of his clients, as usual, think that he's going to die when he fights these monsters, which is why they don't go in. And one of the guys says, we made a deal with a living witcher, not a dead one. So they try to jack Roach and they try to leave. And just at that moment when they're jacking Roach and trying to get out of there and Yaskier is failing, even to the point where he's like, hey, stop. He says, what are you going to do? Sing us to death? Like, you know, he's like not even trying to hear him. A friend shows up, you know, a new person, a man named Borsch, three jackdaws, and his companions, Taya and Vea, arrive and they swiftly kill one of the men and collect Geralt's coin as he's coming out of the cave. Borsch then takes Geralt to a tavern along with Yaskier and Taya and Vea, and he asks him for his help. There's a dragon causing issues, and there's a king that set a bounty, and he wants his help, Geralt's help, to go ahead and go dragon hunting.
Okay, can we just talk about the dragon is burning up the countryside? The dragon is like, and he so downplays it. He's like, yeah, like the dragon was a little tight. Burned the hillside.
Oh man, I don't know. Burning hillsides is pretty standard fare for a dragon.
Well, seems for the amount that they seem to say that later in the episode, they talk about how like dragons are fairly rare. Mm-hmm. Does anyone in this tavern look concerned?
Not at all. They're chilling. They're having a great time. And what happens next is, of course, because this is on brand for Geralt, he refuses to do it. He's like,
always. No. Yeah. Always.
Yeah, but you know what?
He needs to read Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes.
So he's saying no, but Yaskier is like trying to, you know, get in with the ladies that are accompanying Borsch, Veya and Taya. And he's like, you know what? We'll do it, you know? And you have he uses, obviously been hanging out with Geralt and trying to take pointers because the game is weak sauce.
He's like, really bad. It's really bad.
You have the most incredible neck. It looks like a sexy goose guzzling.
Even Geralt was like, bruh.
Yeah. It was terrible. Oh my God. It's so terrible. Then he makes a pitch for a menage a twizzy. He's like, yo, let's do this. I can see it now. The tale of two Zarkanians and their poet lover. I think we'll do it. So he's like trying to make the pitch to go. And he's more excited about possibly getting the song out of this than even the actual sexual interaction.
As we said, he's desperate for his comeback song. He wants to go back on tour. And he wants to be the main liner as opposed to having Geralt be the main attraction. He wants to be back in the spotlight.
Yeah, he wants to be like, you know, in sync over Backstreet Boys. I get it. I got what we're saying. It's cool. So
this is what we're doing now.
They have Justin Timberlake, damn it. All right, so here's what we're going to do. So he's like not even trying to roll at all until Yen, a.k.a. Jinbei, walks in, okay?
Oh, my God. Jinbei.
He walks into the tavern. She walks in, and she's with a knight who is also hunting the dragon. He's so resolute anti-dragon until that point, and then at this point when he sees her, he's like, yeah. And now Yaskier is like, no, and backpedaling. Fuck that, because... I'm not trying to roll
like,
again.
He's like, this woman is insane. Like, I love you, bro, but like, your girl is crazy. I really don't want to be around her.
Oh my God.
Don't make this awkward. I don't want to make you choose, but like, choose me.
Yeah, exactly. He is not down. Oh my gosh. So, there, in addition to these two teams of, you know, Borsch's team, and who now includes Yaskier and Geralt, and Yen's team with the knight, there are two other teams manned by dwarves and reavers that are also going. So at base camp, when they're all getting ready to go, tensions are pretty high between the reavers and the dwarves, which don't seem to get along. But the dwarves seem friendly enough to Geralt, and Yennefer and Yaskier share some back and forth where, you know, Yennefer leads off with, the crow's feet are new.
Absolutely savage. Absolutely. She really hurt his feelings.
Yeah. And she's like, he's all, but you're really old, you know? Like, so he's like, you know, he slinks off. And her knight seems a little bit overzealous. He's a little bit of, as the kids would say, a sweat. You know, he's like, he's a go-hard. You know, he's extremely one note for kingdom and glory.
He's terrible. This guy is awful.
He's horrible. Like we'll get more. We'll get back to him in a minute. But in Ciri's timeline, after Yen and Geralt and Yaskier exchange words, we go back to Ciri's timeline, and the princess and fake Malsek and Dara make their way out of Brokilon Forest. Ciri is like that annoying kid in the backseat of a car in a road trip asking mad questions. Who is Geralt exactly? Did my grandmother know him well? Why did she never mention him before? Why did she let him claim the law of surprise? What does that even mean?
She's so annoying in the fake Mousak is just like barely keeping it together. He's just like, I'm gonna murder this little girl. He's barely, you can see in his face, he's like counting his money. He's like, all right, I just gotta get her the Nilfgaard. I just gotta get her the Nilfgaardians, and then I'm gonna have money, and then I can do something else. It's really rough.
Yeah, it's rough. But the truth is, in fairness to Ciri, she is asking some questions that the audience would really like to know. So it's actually like a good nod to us, because we're like wanting to know some of these answers. And even though we're not going to get the answers during this interaction, it's fun to know that somebody else is thinking the same way we're thinking right now.
Yeah.
So the four teams back to the dragon hunt are heading up the mountain, and Yaskier's questions Taya and Veya why they're helping Borsch. I mean, he's trying to hit on him too, but he's just wondering, hey, why him and not me? Come on. They reply that it's an honor because he is the most beautiful. And Borsch and Geralt have their own chat, where Borsch surmises that Geralt loves Yen. Of course, at this point, Yaskier gets into trouble as he comes across Ahirika. Yen's knight slaughters it without hesitation, to everyone's utter shock and dismay. Their faces are mortified. And Geralt says it would have gone away if we just fed it. Needless to say.
This whole interaction was really disturbing. But Kim, two things about this. First thing is, Yaskier, as soon as he's like separated, not 10 feet from Geralt, of course he finds trouble. Of course. I'm like, why are you there? Like, you're just a liability at this point.
Yeah.
Then he's talking to this thing. He's like, oh, aren't you the cutest? And it's a terrifying, large, quite large monster.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. It's
then
huge.
Then Geralt is like, it's not a big deal. Like, calm down, children. And the knight is just like, I'm going to murder it. It was an overkill. It was already dead, and he's just like chopping it away.
Yeah, it was, and just going in, like, you see Yen's face, and everyone's face. Yen's face was the best, though, when he's killing it, and she's like, oh god, why am I like trying to be a mage to this guy for this guy's kingdom? It's hilarious. Anyway, at dinner, after they kill the Hurika, they're sitting there, and people are kind of suggesting that this knight not eat the Hurika, but, you know, of course, he insists that a knight never, ever, ever waste his kill. So, you know, he's Yen's gallant knight, gets, you know, a little bit of a stomach ache, a little tummy ache, has to go to the bathroom, tries to still be gallant, like, hey, can I walk you back to your tent? She's like, I'm super good. Oh, it's all right. And he goes, runs away to use the bathroom. So there's some really rich dialogue in this moment. Basically, we have an update on Nilfgaard's situation. We know that this is still a little bit before Ciri's timeline, because Nilfgaard has not overthrown Sintra yet. But of course, Yen takes this opportunity to dunk savagely on Franny.
We have not had like an episode where Nilfgaard was involved that someone didn't dunk on Franny. It's tough.
Because you know what? She's a bit, you know, she's like, you know, there was a time in the NBA where there was always one person, and it hurts me because I'm a Knicks fan, that you could see posters of Michael Jordan dunking on Patrick Ewing. He made a living out of it. It's like most of the highlight footage of Michael Jordan's savage dunks are on Patrick Ewing. Okay? So we're just gonna say that that Frangilla is the Patrick Ewing to our story, that there's going to be a lot of dunking on her before this is all said and done. She's coming up. She is coming up, though. So we may want to be careful, because she may enact her revenge.
Yeah, Frangilla is a joke to Yen, right? This is what I find funny about this, is that previously when Frangilla was a joke to everyone, it was based on their knowledge of her at Aretuza.
Yeah.
Frangilla is no longer at Aretusa, and this storyline is not that long before Ciri's storyline. So we know that Frangilla is one of the most powerful mages on the continent right now. But yeah. Yen is still like, Nilfgaard is a hot mess because, you know, their mage is Frangilla.
Oh, man. You know, the thing is that, and this is really, I think, more about Yen being a little bit insecure about the choices she made, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, that's what really brought to the forefront, too, with when Borscht is like, you know, maybe if Nilfgaard would have had a stronger hand to kind of temper their religious zeal and all the things there, they wouldn't be launching these wars. And she understands that he's literally like that dunk that she had was minor in comparison to what he just said, because that really is the core of it, is that she altered the history of the entire continent with that choice.
Yes. And for those of people who struggle with knowing the difference between like a direct insult and shade, what he did was throw shade.
Yeah, it was definite shade. Oh, man, that's great. So at this point, Geralt schools the crowd on the history of dragons, saying they are rare, but they do exist. Gold dragons, the rarest, are a myth we learn through the conversation. More about this a little later. Back in Cirilla's timeline, Dara starts asking questions about fake Mousak and his authenticity. He's rightfully suspicious, but Ciri doesn't believe him. She's just going along, tiptoeing through the tulip. She's so happy Mousak found her. In the next scene, Yen's knight, he did die a shitless death. That was it. It was over for him, and he's found dead.
Was it really a shitless death? I mean,
it was not. He did not die a shitless death. Let's rephrase that. He actually was quite shitty. It was a quite shitty death. Oh man, circa Game of Thrones, Tyrion style, getting murdered while taking a dump, like Tywin. Tyrion, put down the crossbow, Tyrion. Really gonna kill me in the privy?
Yes, I am.
yes, I am gonna kill you in the privy. Exactly. So the dwarves propose an alliance after they find this guy dead and they're walking off. They propose an alliance to Borscht's team, saying that they know a shortcut through the mountain because their people, you know, basically worked in these mountains forever. And because they're some of the oldest people, which we'll talk about more, in this world. And, you know, Yen is marching off ahead and she's pissed off because her knight and escort is gone. But she still has a mission that she has, and the reason why she brought him along anyway. And so Geralt speeds up along to try to talk to her a little bit. And Yen says that the Reavers basically killed her escort. She knows who did it, and she's not happy about it. And Yen tells Geralt that she's looking for the dragon because she's heard of its healing properties. And Geralt and Yen argue about her desire to have a child. He basically goes into letting her know that, you know, this lifestyle is not for having children. And that one of the most, he said, they've done a lot of, the people who changed us did a lot of things that were cruel. But one of their kindest was making it so that we couldn't have children because this lifestyle doesn't suit them. And she says that she wants her choice back, that it's not about just having the child, but that it's about choice. And they have a moment of connection where he can understand that because, you know, that is something that he's also had taken away. And in that moment, though, he also lets it slip about Ciri and that he has, you know, invoked the law of surprise and that this child has been promised to him. And just a quick note, through this conversation, you know that it's really clear that they've been seeing each other over time between these episodes that we've seen. So this is like, you know, you can tell that multiple times they've like gotten back together. So at that moment, also, one of the key things, a little bit of comedy stylings from our boy Geralt, a.k.a. Geralt, a.k.a. the White Wolf, talking about, what are you going to do? Summon your chaos in between feedings and nap time? Pretty funny. Yep. Epic stuff.
Yeah. From Geralt. That was funny. But tough look on Geralt here. This was not good boyfriending. I was just like, you're mocking her choice here in something she really wants. He could have been a little bit more empathetic. For sure.
He could have been way more empathetic, but it is, you know, you have to give a shout out to Geralt whenever he finds anything other than, yeah, we will. I mean, let's just go ahead and say that we're going to cut back to Ciri's timeline and the journey that they're on. So having thought about Dara's words, Ciri realizes that Mousak is a little bit weird. She asks him a question about his home and about things that only he would know, which is kind of a quiz. And then he fails. He basically doesn't come up with the right answer. And at that point, Dara makes his move to try to help Ciri, and the Doppler starts to burn his hand with the silver dagger. And I was pretty impressed with Dara in this moment, who pushes him up against a tree, asks him to, like, you know, tell who sent him to try to and gets a little bit of information. And then Ciri's like, kill him or I will, distracts Dara to get hit in the head because he didn't need her help at all. And he gets knocked out. And then, you know, the Doppler goes after Ciri, and Ciri bolts. She's out of there. She's, like, gone. Like, doesn't stop, doesn't think, oh, well, Dara could get killed if I leave. She just takes off down the block with no concern for her friend.
None. She's gone.
Not a good look.
I really did not like Ciri's behavior in this whole scene. I mean, good on her for finally noticing something wasn't right about fake Mousak, but Dara didn't want to kill the Doppler. He just wanted to get some information and get away from him. She's like, I'm going to kill him. And then she messes up the whole thing. She gets Dara hurt and then she bolts.
Yeah. Not dope. And you know, here's the thing that Dara says, it's not just your life. It's my life too, if you get this wrong. And I didn't want to leave Brokilon Forest. We would have been safe there. And he's like, you know, he's bars from the homie Dara, bars. Like, he's right. He's not wrong. Like, he is clearly laying out to her that all of this is now endangering them for no reason, you know? So I liked it. I liked this section. I thought there was a lot of information given, and I thought that I just thought it was a lot of information given, and there was a lot of funny moments, and especially to open the episode.
This section had so much going on in it. I just feel I was really overwhelmed because it's funny. This episode is really, really funny. But then there's also some really good stuff in here about, like, what's going on, the situation in Nilfgaard, which is really coming to a head in the story. Nilfgaard has a lot more screen time than they usually have. And we're starting to get a sense of the urgency that other people felt as Nilfgaard was on the move. But also the arrogance, right? Like, Jaskier is like, oh, they'll never get past Syntra. It's not going to happen. Well, we know that in the very first episode of the show, they sacked Syntra. They took the whole city. So I thought that this was... I'm constantly impressed by the writing in the dialogue. The writers of this show, sometimes the plot points are kind of clunky, but the dialogue is pretty impactful and meaningful.
I agree. I totally agree. And I think you're right. It's the hubris of people to think that Syntra couldn't fall. It's also the hubris, quite frankly, of Yen, who we love as a character, of thinking, oh, well, they got Frangilla, like, they're not going to be successful because Frangilla is not capable as a sorceress. And we learn as the story goes on, as we see that she is quite capable, and she's doing their combination is working out just great with her and the Black Knight. So I think it shows a lot of like both, like you said, the fear that people had of Nilfgaard taking over, and also, you know, kind of the hubris that they had in allowing these events to take place, you know?
Yeah. It's clear everybody really doesn't think much of Nilfgaard, and that's the reason that Nilfgaard is able to kind of run through the continent and eventually makes it to Syntra. Because before they get to Syntra, they have to overthrow Temeria, other places we've been. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to get past these other kingdoms in order to get to Syntra, and then everyone kind of assumes Syntra is going to hold the line, and we know that it falls.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also like that they've introduced a little something that we're not quite clear on yet, but we're going to, I think, get clearer as it goes on. They've introduced this concept that you know, Nilfgaard, a lot of the reasons for their thing have to do with, like, their religious zeal and the things that they believe. Like, it's kind of introduced at the fire around the dinner, and how one of the reasons why they wanted a strong mage or different mages there were so that they could kind of temper what a lot of people feel, like what the Brotherhood was already probably foreseeing this as a problem. And it really starts to highlight, in my opinion, the reason why Yennefer's choice was a tough look for the continent, but also why Tessaia keeps coming back and saying, hey, you know, Franny's over there and she's doing well. And this highlights a little bit, even from the last episode, why Tessaia felt like it was necessary to try to get Yen back into the fold.
Yeah. Yen. I love her, but this not the best decision. Not the best life choices. So the shortcut that the dwarves suggest is scary AF. It's basically a rickety old wooden ledge that is around the mountain.
Yeah.
Like, they're just supposed to walk on this, like, I don't know, 1.5 foot wide ledge that has not been secured in probably centuries and survive. So, of course, that doesn't go very well. The ledge fails, and Bort, Taya, and Vea all fall when it breaks. Mm. Geralt is pretty upset by this. He was supposed to sort of be their muscle, you know? He was supposed to help them on this journey, and he's not able to save them. And, you know, Yaskier talks to him and basically says, we can leave. Like, it wasn't your fault. We can leave. You know, he's trying to cheer him up. But Geralt is not going anywhere because he knows that Yen has an enchanted tent that has a full bed and a table. She's got fruit on the table. It looks like something out of, like, a Pottery Barn for your camping trip catalog. I was like, what is going on here?
And it looks so small on the outside. It's like an endorsement for tiny houses. You know what I mean? Like, it's like this tiny little tent, and then you go in and it's like, wow, this is nice. It's like lavish.
Yeah. So, the woman had a queen size bed in this tent.
Yeah.
A queen size bed.
It was nice. It was a good, it's a nice tent. I appreciated it.
And you could tell it smelled good inside too. Like, it's nice.
You could also tell because of Geralt. He's all like, that smell. Every time I'm near you, I get so sad when it fades. This fucking guy.
We need some interventions. Geralt, you need to learn how to better express your feelings.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. He actually expressed really well this episode. I was actually proud of him.
He's doing better. So they get down to business quickly because, you know, that's how they roll. Mm-hmm. You know, these two people are very attractive. They don't, mm-hmm. they live dangerous lives, don't know when they're going to see each other again. Mm-hmm. And it's really clear that they've met many times since they have been in Rind. I think she specifically mentioned two or three other times. Mm-hmm. And my guess is there could have been even more than that. It's clear that their connection is more than a physical one. In their post-coital discussion, Yen tells Geralt that she's always dreamt of being important to someone. And I was very moved. I'm getting a little teary. As he's falling asleep, he tells her that she's very important to him. Yeah. It's just so, I was like, okay, this is romantic.
Yeah.
So when she awakes, he's still there. And that's a big deal for her because these two are in a situation where they're constantly abandoning each other or they're constantly pulling back from the relationship. So the fact that in the morning, Geralt is still next to her really means a lot to her.
Well, he also, it's also highlighted here, which I think was really great with the writing too, that in these interactions that they've had since we last saw them as an audience, that after, you know, the first interaction where they had him rend, he left first, and she says, you abandoned me first. Like so she has left times afterwards, but I think some of it has been because she didn't know whether she could trust where Geralt was going to be emotionally, right? And you know, that's even where she leads off when they're having their conversation is, you know, they say that witchers can't feel. So she's trying to, I think, feel him out to see, like, hey, what is, you know, do you have emotions? Like, what do you think about it? So that's why I think it's, like you said, it was really sweet and really emotional when he says, you're important to me, you know, like, cause she's always wanted to be important to somebody. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I like this interaction a lot because their relationship in the previous episode did seem very physical. Even though they have a lot in common, it just seemed like they just wanted to bone. You know, mm-hmm. they're just mm-hmm. out here. Mm-hmm. They had just gone through this terrible experience and now they have a little pent-up energy. But this demonstrates that over time, their connection has deepened.
And that Geralt even stops her. In the beginning, she goes into the physicality and he stops her to have like a moment to connect. And she said, isn't that what you came in here for? And he goes, no, I came in here for you. So there was like some depth to the emotion to let you feel like, okay, these guys have a relationship that's complicated, but a relationship nonetheless.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They definitely have feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. So back in Ciri's timeline, Ciri is captured. It turns out that the Nilfgaardians have gotten her. And the Black Knight is talking to her in his quarters about, you know, how she's part of the Destiny and how important she is, yada, yada. You know, the typical stuff that the Black Knight would say to her. Mm-hmm. Plot twist, it's not Ciri. This was so good. It's actually the Doppler who has taken the form of Ciri and then takes the form of the Black Knight and they have a fight. This was also interesting just because we keep bringing up the importance of silver, but this is how the Black Knight figured out it was in Cirilla. He tried to offer a drink in a silver goblet and she wouldn't take it. And then he got suspicious. I think he does wound the Doppler with the silver dagger, but he does escape. So the next morning, Geralt and Yennefer wake up and they're talking about their plans. And then, you know, they look down at the camp and the dwarves are all gone.
Bounce. They're trying to get there. They're trying to like, hey, listen.
Listen, they said that we have an alliance until we get to the other side of the mountain. Read the fine print in the contract. They never said we're all in this together.
You never seen these hobbitses, these dwarves? they got out of there quick. You don't trust them, man. Shoot, you didn't see. They must have skipped Lord of the Rings on the streaming services. They must have skipped it. Because them damn little people, they be getting over to the gold and the dragons super quick, super fast, on the quick fast. Anyway.
So the dwarves have gotten an early start. Yen actually catches up to them and then she freezes them with some kind of magic. And she gets to the cave and finds a green dragon. But the dragon is dead. Okay. And protecting an egg, Taya and Vea, who in the previous evening had just fallen off of a mountainside, mm-hmm. are apparently alive and they are protecting this dead dragon. And they basically tell Yennefer that they're protecting the dragon and her egg.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising to Yennefer to find, you know, Taya and Vea. They're like, what? How the hell? But she's ready to do battle, like she's getting ready to go. And then, you know, here comes Geralt. You know, Geralt comes in and, you know, I like that Geralt is a guy who is paid to kill monsters, but in the same time has restraint when it comes to like warfare. Like, he doesn't just go into it. He doesn't have a bloodthirst. It's like he tries to find a way to be peaceful where he can.
Are you saying that he's different from the knight that Yennefer was with? Are you drawing contrast?
I am drawing contrast because that guy was she-rash.
Legit just like started stabbing the corpse of the dead dragon. Like, that guy was terrible.
The guy would have taken an L though, because Taya and Vea would have wrapped him up real quick. She killed a man with her bare hands. No steel necessary, as she says, appropriately.
And also no F's necessary, because she wasn't upset about it. She just did it because it needs to be done.
At all.
So Geralt comes in and he also is surprised that Taya and Vey are alive. And then a golden dragon shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And the dragon speaks.
Yo.
And the dragon is Borch.
This guy, and he's gold. He's a golden dragon. The one that he said was the rarest and not mythological at all. He is a gold dragon out here and starts talking to them and tells them that the mother died and that he was coming to protect her because the mother, that's his child. And so he's trying to keep the child and the baby and her safe. And it is really, really cool. And it's also cool to see Yen have this moment of like, oh, she died protecting her baby. Like, that's what she was doing.
That's when Yen like turns her dagger and she's no longer interested in exploiting the dragon's suffering. Now she's she feels like, okay, this is a sad story. This dragon died to protect its child. Just then. This was a crazy scene because it's like I just felt like the plot twists were coming, but just then the Reavers show up.
Bo Holt with his whack ass.
But can we talk a little bit about how many Reavers there were? There were so many. They multiplied. Like, where did these guys come from?
Lots of people. It's like the bears from His Dark Materials. We were like, where did all these bears happen? There's a lot of bears. All of a sudden, it's like a plethora of fucking bears. There's a lot of Reavers.
Or like the Dothraki in season 8 of Game of Thrones.
They expanded and shrunk. Like, they shrunk and expanded. They were like, they were here. There was a lot of them. Then there was only like 10 of them. And then all of a sudden, there was like a million of them. You know what I mean? It was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. This was weird. But a fight breaks out. Geralt and Yen are protecting the dragon egg. Borch stays in the cave. And can we just talk about my girl Yennefer? Doesn't only have those magical skills, she is a badass with a sword. She
letting them hands
not...
go. Boom, boom.
Yes,
boom.
Just take it. She don't need... Geralt was right when he said earlier in the episode that she is very capable of killing people on her own.
Yeah.
She was very impressive in combat. So I'm just going to go ahead and say we've been dunking on Boring Hogwarts. Boring Hogwarts must have a fencing class, right?
Yo, that is their, you know, best class. Let's just put it that way. They definitely did a good job at Boring Hogwarts of preparing her for hand-to-hand combat because, geez, she is moving out there. It's, you know... I literally, during this episode, when she starts fighting, I turn to my fiance and I go, dang, Yen's got some hand skills. Like, she's out here killing. Like, she is, like, not playing around and not using magical spells. The one thing that I thought was really cool, though, is how her and Geralt combine their powers to use the sign of Ard. That was dope. Like, I was really excited by that. Like, when she says Ard now and then jumps over to him and kisses him and then he does the sign of Ard and it became super strong, like more than we've seen, because he's used the sign of Ard before and it's not been that powerful.
No, that was really cool. I love that. But these two just kicked ass together. And, you know, back in the cave, Borch is protecting the egg with his extremely weak dragon fire. This was unimpressive.
Weak, weak dragon game. I mean, the sign of Ard was a lot stronger than these dragon flames. It Where is Drogon when you need him? All right, yeah, where is he?
I was like, I don't. I think you said it best. It was like a hiccup. It's like a little dragon hiccup. I was not impressed with the dragon fire. I've come to expect more. So, but it does what it's meant to do, right? 100%. Like he protects his dragon egg, but the dragon fire in this episode was unimpressive.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, sure. So they win the fight despite the fact that more Reavers show up. I'm just like, who are these people? Why are there so many of them? Borsh turns back into his human form. The dwarves finally are unenchanted, which was really funny. They missed all the action.
All of it.
And he offers them some dragon teeth to keep silent and so that they can collect the reward from the king.
Yeah, because all of this was commissioned by a king to get to the dragon who wanted to do that. So that was really cool. It was a good reveal that we found out too that Borsh was he basically went undercover and acted like he was on the hunt, you know, to be able to get close to the enemies. As Taya and Vaya said, they had to get close to their enemies to be able to know what their moves were to keep the dragon baby protected. And it goes back to it was his last first. When he talks about, I need to have my last first, his last first was his first child. And that's really, it's really a touching moment, and it's really cool that the dwarves found it to say, hey, we need proof so that, I don't know if this is going to be enough, but we'll take that as payment and just go along our way. So I like this part of the story, and I like that it's going to probably, I don't think that this is going to be the last time that we see the dwarves in this story. So it shows that, you know, a group of characters that have layers to them. They're aggressive, they hunt large game, but they also have some reasoning and other skills that will endear us to them, I think, long term.
Yeah, and they play fair. That's what I liked about the dwarves. They played really fair. Like, this is a competition, but they understood that they could pool their resources together and move as a group. Mm-hmm. It would be safer that way. And they, I thought that they were pretty fair. So, back in Ciri's timeline, the real Ciri has been tied up by the Dobbler, and Dara frees her, but not before he tells her off.
Yeah, well done.
Tells her off, and I clapped through every word. I was like, she needed to hear this. So he's had enough of her and basically tells her that she's on her own. He's done. And my reaction was the shrug emoji. I was like, okay, well, he tried. He was out here trying to feed her, keep her alive. He got shot for her. Then he got hit in the head for her. Like, and she left him in the dust. Yeah.
Because she doesn't say, you know what it is? Is he saying her all this stuff? And she doesn't go, she doesn't say, you know what? You're right. There are things I can do differently. You were right about like us not leaving Brokilon and this and that. She goes, I'm stopping apologizing for who I am. Like, I'm not going to keep apologizing. And it's like, yo, wait a minute. This guy got hit in the head and knocked out. He could have got up and just walked away. He came and found you again for like the third time. He's saving your life in this story in a hot second. Like, it's only been, for us, 6 episodes. So for her to say, I'm not apologizing anymore for who I am, was kind of a slap in the face to someone who's been...
Yeah. Absolutely. You know? I can understand her feeling that, but not to him. And there's a lot of misdirected anger in this episode. We're about to get to the next piece, which is back in the Dragon Mountains, Borsh debriefs with Yen and Geralt. And it is revealed that, as we surmised last week, that the Last Witch wish has something to do with linking Yen and Geralt.
Yep.
We don't know exactly what the wish was for. It is revealed differently than it was in the book, but Yen does not react positively to this news at all. She basically says, okay, well, then that means everything that I'm feeling for you is magic. That's essentially why I can't get rid of you. And she leaps. She takes off. But just before she goes, Borsh tells them something that he gives them two truths. He says that it's a lot of pain now to avoid some pain later. And he basically tells Yen, you're never going to regrow your womb. You're never going to be able to have a child. And Geralt, that even though he doesn't want to lose her, that he will. Yen is really devastated. She takes off. Her and Geralt are now, you know, relationship status changed again to single. From it's complicated to it's single.
Tough.
Yeah, she was really, really hurt by what Borscht said about how she wasn't going to be able to have a child. So she needs her time. She needs some time to process that.
Yeah.
Geralt then turns around and flips out on Yaskier.
Yeah, not a good look. He goes full tilt. Like, every time I'm going through some shit, you're the one there shoveling it. Like, you know,
it was
from
really
the chin.
Unfair and cruel. I'm still really annoyed by it, because all of the things he listed were not his Yaskier's fault. Like,
yeah,
Geralt was the one looking for the djinn, right? He also was the one who called the law of surprise. Like, mm-hmm. just because Yaskier was there physically during those situations, and he was the one who invited him to the party, but like, Geralt needs to take responsibility for his own choices, the way that we're seeing Yen have to reckon with hers.
And yeah, and you got to just say, fame comes with its price, homie. Like, you know, like, Yaskier made you famous. He made you famous throughout all the continent. You can't sit up here and get mad and throw stones at him now because, oh, you weren't upset when he... Well, I guess you were a little upset when he was writing the songs, but we're not going to count it. It's fine. It's just total misplaced anger. And I love Yaskier. And he looks seriously crushed during that
moment. Yeah, he's genuinely hurt. I mean, it was... This seemed like the type of fight that would end a friendship. So I don't know if these two can come back from this, because what Geralt said was pretty harsh. Right before, well, Borscht's parting words to Geralt are basically that he has to do something about the destiny that he's missing. He can't just keep ignoring it. He can't just keep putting it to the side. He's missing out on his actual destiny because he's trying to avoid it. So I think Geralt is going to take that to heart, and we'll see what he does with it. In our final scene of the episode, Frangilla is cleaning up the Black Knight's wounds. He has literally murdered everybody who was there because he was upset about the Doppler. Like, this room has like a dozen people in it. Everybody is dead except for Frangilla and the Black Knight. And Frangilla gives him a little pep talk. Say, you know, they're going to find Ciri, that Ciri is his destiny. And in this conversation, they're finally referring to the White Flame as a person. So I'm still a little confused about this. So last episode, we talked about how in The Witcher 3, the White Flame is a person who is the Emperor of Nilfgaard. The way they've been talking about the White Flame in the show could be a person, but also could be something of a religious nature or a force, right? Mm-hmm. But in this conversation, I believe it's Frangilla actually says he, mm-hmm. though we know it's a person. And she gives him this pep talk, and he's ready to go looking for a little girl who can't really hurt him again because he's mean and obviously obsessed with this destiny.
What was so funny is during the fight, with him and the Doppler, he goes, "Do you really believe?" The Doppler's like, "Do you really believe all this stuff? Oh, you're crazy with these prophecies." I was rolling. He's mid beating his ass, and like, "Do you really believe all this? Oh my god!" Because he's able to like hear his thoughts, and I thought that tells you a lot, that this guy is like obsessed with this prophecy. He is totally taken by it.
Can we talk a little bit about that conversation with the Doppler, though?
Yeah.
So, I was super annoyed by the Doppler's use of the royal we.
Yeah.
You lied to us. I was like, I hate when people speak about themselves in the third person, but I also hate when they speak about themselves as if there's more than one person.
Yeah.
That was too funny. I was like, is this because Doppler is like consider themselves to be one with the person who shape they've taken? Or is this just because he has an inflated sense of self?
Oh my God.
Yeah, the conversation between him and the Doppler was funny. He was like, you believe this nonsense?
Yeah,
this
it was great.
This is foolishness.
No, it was great. It was super, super good.
I assume we're going to see the Doppler again, too.
I think we're going to see a lot of people. I think we're going to see Dara again. I think Yaskier obviously is going to be back. I think the dwarves are going to return. You don't, you know, you give somebody something here for them to be able to take back to a king. There's going to be some sort of like it, later on, hopefully, depending on how many seasons the show goes, you'll see them again. I'm not sure that we're done with Borscht and the Golden Dragon. So I think that we'll see some of that as well. So there's some things that are going on there, and you know, it's to me, I feel like the dismount of the whole thing was lashing out about losing Yen at Yaskier. I think it was less about Yaskier than it was about. We know this already, but I think Geralt just is he likes to be alone, and Yaskier was never going to just abandon him. So he did he's taking shots at his singing. He's taking shots at everything else. The only thing he could do is try to tell him very plainly, I don't want you around. And that's what I think he does. I think it's the wrong choice because I think Yaskier is a loyal friend. And I think that ultimately has done more for Geralt than Geralt even lets on, you know?
I totally agree. And I think Yaskier is we've seen Geralt become more and more human, mm-hmm. Because of his interactions with his friend and also with his lover. And I think that being alone, while that might be more comfortable for Geralt, it's not good for him. It's mm-hmm. not bringing him joy. It's not, he kind of just stews with himself. Well, the last time we saw him in his worst state was when he was looking for the djinn, and it was clear he had been alone for some time. He hadn't met Yen yet, and Yaskier and he had a conversation about how they essentially haven't seen each other in years. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that, you know, being alone or, you know, being with prostitutes, which is what Geralt tends to do, right? Mm-hmm. He has these like short interactions that are transactional only, is good for him long term, which should be interesting, you know, if and when he finds Ciri, because she is a child, she's quite mm-hmm. needy, mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see how he deals with having a new type of companion, which is one that essentially needs you to survive.
And asks a lot of questions. A lot of fucking questions.
Jesus. She's going to have so many questions for him.
So many. Oh my
but
God.
You know what? I'm ready for it. I want to see these two interact.
Me too. And I like Ciri. I know that we've been hard on her this episode, but it gets better for her. So I'm excited about how it's going to go for them. And I also, you know, I just I'm rooting for Geralt and Yen. I like them together, so I hope that takes shape as well, which I feel like it will. I think we'd be remiss to not at least acknowledge, like you said inside the summary, the difference between her reaction, at least in the book, The Last Wish, to this versus her reaction in the show and during that conversation. She seems to be taken by whatever he wished for, and that it kind of condemned him to her in that moment. I don't know how it plays out in subsequent books. I'm still on my journey in that, but I think it's at least worthy to acknowledge that this is something that I think the show plans on doing something with, that she's, you know, feeling like it's magic versus their actual want to be together. There's something else that they're setting us up for here with that conversation, for sure.
Yeah, she was disturbed by this. Don't think this will last, though. I think that she will be back, and I think these two belong together, frankly. Maybe that's just me hoping, right? Mm-hmm. But I like them together. They seem to have a really good impact on each other, and I think that once Yen gets over her initial hurt, she will realize that her feelings for him are genuine, just like his mm-hmm. feelings for her are genuine.
Yep. I agree. So let's talk about things that you need to know. Like we say, we try to give a little bit of something to get us have a deeper understanding of this world every episode. And for the people who have been watching and maybe trying to sort things out for themselves as well, like we have been, let's kick it off. What do you got for us to start it out?
So let's talk about Taya and Vea. They are badasses. I love them. I was so excited when they came on the screen initially. They do seem very out of place in this world, and that is because they are from a kingdom that is isolated from the rest of the kingdom. They are Zarakadians, and Zarakadians live in a kingdom that is isolated by mountain ranges, deserts, and basically wastelands. It's perceived as by the people from the continent is a mysterious land where there are warrior women, dragon cults, and exotic beasts. So I don't know what that means in the context of there's dragons. what an exotic beast would mean. The Zarakadians are also a matriarchal free society. So it's basically led by women. And they worship dragons, which is why they're with him. They're with Borsch because they have various dragon cults and they worship the dragon lore. That's their religion.
I thought that's super interesting. And it really prompts me to want to get deeper into as much as I can find out about that group, because it almost reminds me of Essos, right? In Game of Thrones, like being kind of far off into another area where dragons come from and there's dragon lords and there's, so it's like, it's pretty cool. I'm interested to find out more about if there's more writing about that in the work, you know?
Yeah. So I actually think this could be an oversight, or it could be that I just can't find it because of the way the map is laid out. I can't find this kingdom on Netflix's map. Mm-hmm. I would love to see exactly where it is, because it says it's isolated, but I would love to know like how far is it from, mm-hmm. like how unusual is it to see Zarakadians in the northern part of this continent.
I don't know, but I'm sure Yaskier wants to find out.
Yeah, what?
He was on it.
I feel like he may go find them and be like, take me to kingdom to be surrounded by beautiful women that I can write dragon stories about.
Exactly. We find next time we see Yaskier, he's on the back of the golden dragon riding out like, yo, I leveled up, Geralt. I leveled up. So let's talk about some other groups that were here in this episode. And one of those groups being the ones that we don't particularly love so much, the Reavers. Yeah, exactly. So the Reavers, or the Sinfrid Reavers, were a group of mercenaries specialized in fighting dragons and drachnoids, and active throughout the second half of the 13th century in this world. Originally, there were only three of them, which were Kennet, Gar, and their leader, Boholt. And they joined many hunts that were like the one in the episode that we just saw. And Boholt was the leader of this group for a lot of their time together. And he managed to slay, along with his comrades, three red, one black, and one Draco lizard in Redania. So this would justify why Borsch needed reinforcements through Geralt and trying to even maybe see if like get other people to come, because these guys were very good at slaying dragons and putting creatures that were very large down. So there's something there. There were really only three, but in the books there's a slight change from the show. Boholt dies in this episode, but he just loses his memory in the books, which forces them to go and recruit other members, which would explain those large numbers. So they kind of mashed up the two. He dies.
Would it explain the large numbers? Would it? Because really, they started out with like, what, eight guys? And then by the end, they have 20 guys.
Well, they recruited along the way. They were like, hey, come be a Reaver. You know what? When you're a Reaver, you know, you can get these benefits. You get to run up on dragons, get breathe fire on you. It's cool. No, I don't know. I think it doesn't really explain, like, in this episode how they multiplied visually, but it, at all. But it explains why the Reaver group grew in lore and in the world. But, yeah, no, this episode, it was wild.
So let's talk about the beasts that they're slaying, because dragon, you know, the most mainstream folks know about the dragon lore of Game of Thrones. But dragon lore is different in every story. And in this story, their dragons are very specific types. So you have, they're traditional dragons, you know, they got four legs, they're reptiles, they have wings. But then there's different types, like the green dragon, the red dragon, the black dragon, white dragon. And of course, now we know that there's such a thing as a golden dragon. And I'll talk a little bit more about the golden dragon in a moment. Depending on the type, they have various, all of them breathe a dangerous substance, but that substance may be fire, it could be acid, or it could be steam. Most of what seems to be known about dragons comes from information that Reavers have reported back after encountering them. So they're dangerous, but not all of them have their little, you know, hiccup fire. Some of them have other stuff.
I feel like steam would be magical. Like nice little steam, little spits in the middle of a cave. Cool. Let's go for it.
You clearly never put your like bare arm over a pot that was boiling, because that is not magical. That's not magical. That hurts.
Oh, man.
The golden dragon is very different. Golden dragons are able to shapeshift. I'm still learning a bit about this. So the way that the golden dragon was discussed in this episode, and yes, that is a character that comes back in the larger Witcher universe more than once. But they're able to shapeshift, and they like spending their time amongst people. So I thought that was really interesting that a dragon not only has something dangerous like fire, but also is able to shapeshift like a Doppler, basically. Can take it. I don't think they can take the form of a specific person, but they can take the form of the life form. So you could present as a human, or maybe you could present as a cat if you wanted to, but they're able to take the form of whatever life form that they want to.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really, really cool. So I like it. And lastly, what we'll talk a little bit about is are the dwarves. And the dwarves are one of the humanoid races in this world of the continent. And together with gnomes and elves, they are called the Elder Races, which we've talked about before in previous episodes. And along with gnomes, they were one of the oldest sentient races on the continent. An adult dwarf can grow to anywhere up to a human male's chest. They are more sturdy than humans, so it makes them tougher and stronger in battles. And they usually grow long beards, as we all know from a lot of like mythical lores and stories. And dwarves are often excellent soldiers, artisans, and business people, which could tell you why they were down for that trade at the end. They understood the exchange. And while they tend to be a little bit uncouth, they're also jolly, cheerful. And the main person who we were introduced to from the dwarves on this episode as like a main player was Yorpin Zagrin. He's a well-known dwarven warrior, an adventurer, and a dragon hunter. He's the leader of the group in this episode, and he's also a leader of the dwarves in general, and later becomes a veteran of a battle called the Battle of Brenna, which is arguably in this world one of the most important wars that happened, and it's a possibility because they talk about that he's a veteran of that war in the general lore that we would probably see him again.
Great, I liked him. I really liked the dwarves in this episode. They were so. Yeah. They were just great. They were so reasonable. They were helpful. They were funny. They did not like the Reavers at all, which was a good take.
Yeah. So. Strong take. Good take. They were good for sure. So, all right. Well, here we are. End of episode 6. And we thank you guys for listening and for all of the feedback. And we've gotten some people who have really hit us up in different, you know, in Facebook and some people have yet to use snail mail, which is now email, but use the email account and also on our social, like on Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter. But we have gotten some good feedback and some things that we're going to be putting out based on some of the information that some dear fans of this show and of the greater Witcher world have given us, along with even a Harry Potter sorting chart. What?
Yeah. That we promised a sorting chart.
Yep.
It is coming. We will sort these characters and know they are not all Slytherin.
No, they are not all Slytherin. They are not. But yeah, thank you guys for listening, and look out for that content and other content coming on our Facebook page and other possible venues. So thanks again.
Thank you. Bye, guys.